You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the Psychiatry Smartcast Micro-Learning Podcast Series hosted by Med Learning Group. My name is Dr. Sylvia Hanna, Medical Director at Med Learning Group, and I will be the host of today's podcast, which is the third in a series of three podcasts. In this series, we will discuss three patient cases: a patient with an initial episode of MDD that has rapidly caused functional impairment and suicidal ideation. In the second case, a woman with recurrent MDD who responded to escitalopram with past major depressive episodes. And in the third case, a patient with recurrent depressive symptoms who is not responding to previously effective SSRIs. In this episode, we will review the case of recurrent depressive symptoms in a patient who is not responding to previously effective SSRIs. This podcast will include discussion of treatment management strategies and applicable clinical trial data. Joining me today is Dr. Anita Clayton, Wilford W. Spradlin Professor and Chair in the Department of Psychiatry and Neurobehavioral Sciences at University of Virginia School of Medicine in Charlottesville, Virginia. Welcome, Dr. Clayton. It is so good to have you with us today.
I'm excited to be here and talk about this case.
Dr. Clayton, it is estimated that 30% to 50% of patients experience inadequate response to antidepressant therapy. What qualifies as an inadequate response in clinical practice?
So we think of response as a 50% or greater improvement in depressive symptoms, usually using a validated rating scale. And remission is dropping below a threshold where the person really doesn't meet criteria for depression. An inadequate response is when people experience anywhere between more than zero and up to but less than 50% improvement. A complete lack of efficacy or lack of response is when the patient would say, I feel no better whatsoever, and I maybe even feel worse. So we're looking for somebody who's been adequately treated with the right dose and the appropriate duration to expect a therapeutic response, but they've not achieved a 50% improvement in their symptoms.
And what are some of the treatment options for patients with MDD with inadequate response?
So the treatment choices really include augmenting the antidepressant with another therapy, increasing the dose of the current antidepressant, switching to a different antidepressant, presumably often with a different mechanism of action, or combining antidepressants, also using two different antidepressants that have unique or different mechanisms of action. Clinicians should tailor treatment strategies based on patient's response, their tolerability, the disease severity, and patient preferences.
Dr. Clayton, let's begin with a case of a patient with recurrent MDD who is not responding to previously effective SSRIs.
So this is a 52-year-old woman with recurrent depressive symptoms who's not responding to an effective SSRI with a previous episode. She reports three prior major depressive episodes, each one responsive to citalopram 20 milligrams per day. The last major depressive episode was 6 years ago. She was treated for 5 years, and citalopram was discontinued 1 year ago. She's developed some health issues, including hypertension and is taking propranolol, fatigue, is status post total abdominal hysterectomy with bilateral salpingo-oophorectomy for fibroids 2 years ago, and complains of hot flushes and weight gain, and she's now overweight with a BMI of 29. The current episode began 6 months ago with depressed mood that was still reactive to external events, but she experienced lack of interest or pleasure in activities, increased sleep, having no energy, overeating, feeling low self-esteem, bradykinesia, so moving slowly, loneliness, and a decreased ability to focus or concentrate. She denies suicidal thoughts or behaviors. She's now missing work at least 1 day per week and is on notice. Citalopram 20 milligrams per day was restarted 4 weeks ago without any benefit. Her PHQ-9 score is 24, indicating severe depression.
Dr. Clayton, you mentioned the PHQ-9, which is the Patient Health Questionnaire 9. How should healthcare providers utilize this, and how should they interpret the results? As you mentioned, in this patient, her PHQ-9 score is 24.
So the PHQ-9 is a validated screening tool that is completed by the patient. They're instructed to consider the review period of their symptoms for the past 2 weeks. There are 9 questions, mostly related to symptoms of depression. And the responses for each question include not at all, several days, more than half the days, and nearly every day. Interpretation of the total score occurs really for screening purposes at about 10. So a score of 10 or more indicates depression, and moderate depression up to about 14. Scores of 15 to 19 suggest moderately severe depression, and scores of 20 to 27 suggest severe depression. So in this case, our patient has severe depression.
Dr. Clayton, what assessments would you recommend in this patient?
So a couple things. We need to be evaluating some of her health conditions because they've come on essentially since her last depressive episode, and they may be contributing to a lack of response. I would obtain some labs on her, including a TSH, a comprehensive metabolic panel, and a CBC. I would also evaluate her for sleep apnea. We use a specific questionnaire in our clinic, but the STOP-BANG questionnaire is available to everyone and can be very helpful in suggesting that further evaluation for potential sleep apnea needs to occur. We also want to assess her alcohol use patterns and screen for substance use disorder. And I would suggest using the Alcohol Use Disorders Identification Test or audit. Conducting these lab tests is appropriate in this midlife woman. She relays a linear history with intact memory, so I don't think there's a need to screen for dementia. With the weight gain, fatigue, increased time sleeping in bed, and difficulty focusing, obstructive sleep apnea should be considered. She didn't mention alcohol, but suspicion of abuse should be high in a perimenopausal woman with her complaints who's missing a day or more of work per week.
What did her workup show?
Well, the TSH was elevated at 7, suggesting hypothyroidism. Her comprehensive metabolic panel is within normal limits except her liver function tests. So AST is 98, ALT is 75, so the ratio is 1.3, and her ALK-FOS is 170. A CBC shows mild microcytic anemia. Anemia in a non-menstruating woman may indicate bleeding in the gut. She also has hypothyroidism, and the liver disease is likely due to alcohol and may be contributing to bleeding into the gut. We administer the STOP-BANG questionnaire with a score of 5, indicating a risk of moderate to severe obstructive sleep apnea. And her audit score is 16, indicating the likelihood of alcohol dependence, that is moderate to severe alcohol use disorders. It may sound like I've administered a number of questionnaires, but most of them the patient completes. They also are helpful in that we don't continue to try to change her medications when actually approaching other medical conditions might do the trick in terms of response to antidepressant treatment.
What would you recommend in this patient?
With the major depressive episode, the hypothyroidism, and the moderate to severe alcohol use disorder, she needs a thorough medical workup. This major depressive episode has atypical features, that is, sleeping too much, eating too much. And we didn't ask about this yet, but we need to talk about sensitivity to rejection. Perimenopause may diminish response to an SSRI such as citalopram, but we might see benefit with an SNRI like desvenlafaxine. You would avoid bupropion at this time as it may increase the risk of seizures seen with alcohol intoxication or withdrawal. She needs an OSA evaluation and education about sleep hygiene. In outpatients, it's likely that benzodiazepine detox would be used along with the alcohol, leading to respiratory depression and potentially death, especially with OSA and liver dysfunction. So I don't want to give her benzos to take as an outpatient. We also need to obtain a urine drug screen as other substance use may be involved here.
And how did you include the patient in the shared decision-making in the management plan here?
A non-judgmental approach is helpful in this patient, given the shame that can be associated with some of these conditions. We talk with her about hypothyroidism, and she's agreeable to starting levothyroxine at 25 micrograms per day. She agrees to a urine drug screen too, reporting that she's not taking any other substances outside of alcohol. And it turns out it's negative for opioids, cannabis, and stimulants. We want to get her in to see the hepatologist who's able to see her within a week and makes the diagnosis of liver disease. So this is an outcome of her alcohol use. At this point, she needs to discontinue alcohol use. And we talk with her about how to do that, given outpatient detox does not appear to be safe for her. She agrees to inpatient alcohol detox and is really on board with stopping alcohol and going to alcohol rehab. She's hospitalized for 5 days, and as she has no complications with a rapid detox using Librium, she goes then to outpatient alcohol rehab. She denies any adverse effects on the desvenlafaxine that we started initially, and that's continued. Her evaluation for obstructive sleep apnea is scheduled for 2 months from now, and she's seen for follow-up 3 weeks after starting all her medications.
How did this patient present for follow-up?
Well, she's very proud of herself because she reports remaining sober after the detox and is taking the levothyroxine, the desvenlafaxine, and propranolol. She reports slightly improved mood and interest in hobbies and movies. She is sleeping less, but still notes frequent awakenings and feels tired in the morning with low energy persisting throughout the day. She feels better about herself with adherence to her treatment plan and is much less lonely participating in the alcohol rehab groups. She's not missed work in the last 2 weeks. Her PHQ-9 score is now 14, but it's still less than a 50% response. Little change occurs over the next 4 weeks, so we increase the desvenlafaxine dose to 100 milligrams per day.
Did the patient have a sleep evaluation done?
She comes to our clinic 2 days after this initial sleep evaluation. A sleep study is now scheduled. Her PHQ-9 score remains elevated at 14 despite the increase in desvenlafaxine dose to 100 milligrams per day. When the sleep study is done, it shows obstructive sleep apnea, so CPAP is initiated. You see her after 1 month of using CPAP nightly. She's much brighter, has energy, and is sleeping 8 hours, getting up only once to go to the bathroom. Her PHQ-9 score is 4. She continues in rehab and is abstaining from alcohol. Her inadequate response to citalopram and then desvenlafaxine at appropriate doses for 6 weeks was related to comorbid medical conditions rather than the wrong medicine. So coordinating care with her other providers was critical.
Thank you, Dr. Clean. That was very informative. We learned a lot today. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. Please join us in the other two podcasts where we discuss a patient with an initial episode of MDD that has rapidly caused functional impairment and suicidal ideation, and the other case, a woman with recurrent MDD who responded to escitalopram with past major depressive episodes. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with ACCME Essentials. I would like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Takeda, who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity.